Global stock markets seemed satisfied at first with a debt deal.
But is Wall Street taking a good hard look and having some doubts?
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Bob Moon in for Jeremy Hobson. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. It's Monday, August 1st.
Welcome, Bob, today.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. Could a debt deal plan include higher taxes down the road?
Schools are asking for more money from parents.
And later, the Easy Bake Oven is changing, and Thomas Edison is rolling in his grave. Ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, providing automatic online backup solutions for small businesses. Learn more and receive a free trial at Carbonite.com with code Marketplace.
After congressional Republicans and Democrats and the White House all said they have a deal, the voting gets underway today. The proposal to raise the debt ceiling calls for at least $2.4 trillion in spending cuts over the next decade, including cuts to defense and entitlement programs. But many economists from all across the political spectrum have said if the U.S. wants to get its debt under control, more revenues are going to be needed. Marketplace's David Gura is with us from Washington with the latest now. Good morning, David.
Morning, Steve.
The Republicans insisted on no new taxes, so are they off the table in this deal?
Well, remember, the president said all along he wanted a balanced approach to this. So that's with both spending cuts and new revenue from raising taxes and changing the tax code. There's a chance we could see taxes on the table in a few months. This deal cuts $1 trillion now, but pushes the bulk of the cuts back a few months. It calls for a new special committee made up of 6 Democrats and 6 Republicans, and the idea is they'd suggest more savings, more ways to save down the line. Now, some Republicans are saying they won't appoint anyone to that committee who would support raising taxes, so this could be trouble. And besides that, Steve, it looks like raising taxes could be exceedingly difficult just under the rules of that committee.
What about the Bush tax cuts? What happens to those tax cuts now?
Well, under this deal, nothing would happen to them. You remember on December 31st, 2012, next year, all of them, from those that affect the middle class to those that affect the wealthy, they're scheduled to expire. Steve, White House officials have said that President Obama would veto any attempt to extend those cuts if there aren't broader tax reforms.
All right, but as we said, David, some say tax revenues are required to fix the budget problem. So does this deal solve anything?
Well, in a way, that's a tough one. Let's not forget what this deal would do. It would raise the debt ceiling. The U.S. would be able to pay its bills. And there would be some new caps on spending. I talked to Mark Goldwine. He's with the Committee for a Responsible Budget. And he told me he's still holding out hope we could see some tax reform soon.
There's disagreement on the number, but I think that there's increasing agreement from all parties that we want to do tax reform that broadens the base, gets rid of a lot of these loopholes and deductions and credits, and then lowers rates.
But there are a lot of ifs here still, Steve. It's up to Congress and it's up to this committee, so we'll have to see what happens.
Marketplace's David Gura in Washington. David, thanks.
Thanks.
Wall Street opened higher, then sank 200 points. Not an auspicious kickoff, and perhaps showing concern that this deal punts much of the tough decision-making into next year. On the line with us now is Mark Zandi. He's chief economist with Moody's Analytics. Good morning.
Good morning.
So lawmakers in Washington are all smiles, but they aren't all done, are they? Does this deal solve our debt problems?
No, it doesn't. We need $4 trillion in deficit reduction over the next 10 years. This gets us $2.5 trillion, but I think that's an achievement. It's a big deal and a very substantive step forward.
Well, many economists, though, have said that we need to raise taxes, not just cut spending, to solve this long term.
Yeah, I think it would be appropriate to raise tax revenue. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to raise marginal rates. You can cut the deductions and loopholes and credits in the tax code. I think that would be much more efficient. It'd be, create a more fairer system. So I think that's still on the table and something that still needs to be discussed and negotiated.
Now, the credit rating arm of your organization, Moody's, has said the U.S. will keep its AAA rating for now. But there's still a widespread belief that bigger cuts were going to be needed. Does this prevent a downgrade?
Well, of course, I'm not part of the rating agency. I don't speak for them. But my sense is, listening to what they have to say, that this should be sufficient to maintain the AAA for the time being. But of course, you know, these are analysts making their own decisions and views, and they may have a different one than my own.
We just got a paltry economic growth figure and cuts in spending at a time like that. It seems to me could send us back into a spiral here. Does this plan give us the breathing room we need to get the economy going again?
I think so. I need to see more details, but my sense is, listening to the president, that there will be no additional spending cuts, at least not this year and next year, that the cuts will engage in 2013 and beyond. And I think by 2013, if everything goes reasonably well, the economy should be able to digest it. So hopefully we won't see any additional cutting in the very near term, because you're right, Bob, the economy is still very weak.
Mark Zandi at Moody's Analytics, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, no one knows for sure whether the credit rating agencies will take their fingers off the trigger that would lower the U.S.'s AAA rating. While budget hawks may applaud all of the cuts in this deal, the agencies, such as Moody's and S&P, may still think the U.S. debt problem is close to becoming unmanageable. Jim Milstein is an expert on corporate restructuring, and he worked with the Treasury Department during the tumultuous days of the financial crisis a few years back. Morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Why, if we may have a deal today, could we still be downgraded?
The deal that is to be voted on today, while it does make a modest step towards deficit reduction, it really doesn't meet the targets that the administration, the Congress, set out for itself, for the country, on this parameter. And as a result, you know, we've raised the rating agency's expectations as to the kind of medium-term fiscal consolidation, in their language, that we would do. And, you know, we're a little short of what they were looking for.
Let's say Moody's and S&P does downgrade the U.S. credit rating. How would you and I feel that?
You know, all other things being equal, the higher your credit rating, the lower your interest costs. So to the extent that, you know, we were to be downgraded, over time, it's likely that our interest costs will be higher than they would otherwise be. And given the size of the debt that the government is carrying, higher interest costs means less money for other things. It'll make the deficit reduction and the investment in the future of the country harder to do, because we'll be spending more money on interest.
What about the political system and the difficulties that we saw there? Does that hurt our credit worthiness, too? I mean, the fact that it took so long and there's so much vitriol on Capitol Hill?
Yeah, if you look at what Standard & Poor's was focused on, is the fact that we did not seem to be able to agree on, you know, having identified deficits as an issue. So the credit watch negative that S&P has put us on, it wasn't a function of the weakness of the economy or of any lingering weakness of the financial system. It was really a concern that our political leaders had lost the ability to manage the government's budget in a kind of responsible fashion.
Restructuring advisor Jim Milstein. Jim, thank you for your insight this morning.
Thanks, Steve.
So, to the debt crisis that really won't go away in Europe, economists and politicians are still haggling over a planned restricted default in Greece. But some skeptics believe Greece should follow the example of Argentina a decade ago and embrace the default. Ian Mount reports from Buenos Aires.
Riots hit the streets of Argentina in late 2001 as the country defaulted on some $100 billion worth of international loans. Confidence plummeted, and one in four people were unemployed. Yet many here say if Greece should default, so be it.
Nurses, police, doctors, teachers should not pay for the mess that their politicians and the banking system has got them into.
Argentina used the money it would have spent repaying loans to build schools, highways, and hospitals. In the decades since, poverty and unemployment rates have fallen by more than half. But while defaulting played a big part in Argentina's recovery, the fact that it had control over its own national currency was important, too. Alan Sibils is chair of the Political Economy Department of the National University of General Sarmiento in Buenos Aires.
It made imports more expensive, so it became more profitable to produce stuff here than to import it. Then the other thing is it made exports more competitive abroad, and so Argentina's exports also took off.
Greece can't devalue while it's locked into the euro. Its options are limited. Miguel Kegel was Argentina's national finance undersecretary in the late 1990s.
The way they're trying to restore competitiveness is by reducing domestic costs, which in many cases means nominal reductions in wages, pensions. Experience shows it's very, very difficult to get these improvements in competitiveness through deflation.
Kegel says that Greece should try to stay in the euro if it can, perhaps by issuing a parallel currency so it could control its money while the economy heals. That may seem drastic, but the Greeks may now have to consider options they once believed unthinkable. In Buenos Aires, I'm Ian Mount for Marketplace.
Maybe you've heard about squatters' rights in some old Western movie. Well, here's a present-day story from Texas, appropriately enough.
Yeah.
Seems this guy was living with some housemates in a little town northwest of Dallas, and he spotted what looked like an abandoned house, so he decided to make an offer.
Okay.
But he couldn't find record of a mortgage holder. He did, however, find an obscure Texas law on the internet, Steve, and it lets someone move into an abandoned property if the owner doesn't assert their rights.
Wow.
So it cost Kenneth Robinson a $15 filing fee to move into the home that's valued at $340,000. Now, he says if the owner does come forward, he'll make an offer, and if not, provided he stays current with his taxes, he could end up taking over the place free and clear if he meets the right conditions after a certain number of years. So he says, hey, it's worth seeing just how this plays out.
A house for 15 bucks.
That's
it. Can't beat that, man.
This podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, online automatic backup designed for small businesses. Carbonite Business automatically backs up files to a secure offsite location. In the event of a hard drive crash, virus, or other problem, files can easily be recovered. More information and a free trial by visiting Carbonite.com using the code Marketplace.
The start of a new school year is mere days away, and as states grapple with tighter education budgets, some families are being asked to share more of the cost. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WIPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
In Keller, Texas, near Fort Worth, riding the bus to school used to be free. Starting this fall, public school students will have to pay $185 a semester.
This is like banks continuing to add fees. You're just going to chase the customers away eventually.
That's James Guthrie with the George W. Bush Institute in Dallas. He says school districts feeling pressed for money are passing more costs on to parents. Last year, a chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union sued the state of California over the practice. Staff attorney David Sapp says schools are charging for basics like books and supplies. Activities like band and football can cost more than $1,000.
This is essentially a tax, and it's most painful and hardest on the members of our society that can least afford it.
Sapp says these fees are illegal in California. Bus fare to and from school is one of the few fees the state allows. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
NBA owners and players head back to the bargaining table today. It is the first time the two sides have met since owners imposed a lockout a month ago. Now, in case the season is canceled, star basketball players are talking about getting paid to play in other countries. Could that undermine the owner's lockout strategy? Here's Marketplace's Jeff Tyler.
A Turkish basketball team has been courting all-stars like Kobe Bryant and Deron Williams. With overseas job offers, elite players are under less economic pressure to cut a deal with team owners. But those are exceptions, says Gabe Feldman, director of Tulane's sports law program.
I think it's the rank and file who are more likely to start feeling the economic pressure, and those players are unlikely to get lucrative deals abroad.
Players aren't the only ones feeling the economic pinch. Some NBA owners say they lose money on games. I asked Feldman, do you buy that?
I think there is some substance that some teams are losing money. I think the number may be overstated, and I think the amount may be overstated.
Owners aren't so worried about players defecting to teams in Europe. They're more concerned that NBA players will follow in the footsteps of the NFL. Pro football players dissolved their union. That allowed a labor court to step in and end that lockout. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
A new study out today finds the fastest growing way to travel between cities in the U.S. is discount bus. Now, we're talking a new breed of bus with flashy names like Megabus and Bolt Bus.
Hmm.
As Alex Goldmark reports, they're stealing passengers from Amtrak and the airlines.
Megabus rents this parking lot on Manhattan's far west side, two blocks from the Lincoln Tunnel. But the company doesn't store its blue double-decker buses here, just passengers. Hundreds of them lined up in the scorching sun. They're under temporary green awnings waiting for rides to Syracuse, Buffalo, Toronto, and elsewhere in the Northeast.
I'm going from New York to Providence for $9.50, and that includes taxes.
Paul Cormier booked more than a month ago for his vacation. Student Nilu Rahai is on a last-minute trip to D.C. That's exactly why she's taking the bus. She paid $23 round trip.
So, like, if I buy the train like 3 days before my trip, it's really expensive, whereas the bus isn't. But if I book ahead of time, like at least 2 weeks before I want to go, I'll take the train.
All aboard Tennies for train 170.
For example, 3 blocks away in Penn Station, she could catch Amtrak to D.C. It's usually faster and runs about $100 round trip, if she books in advance.
Amtrak has lost a lot of business because of these bus companies.
Professor Joe Schwederman and his team at DePaul University have surveyed discount bus passengers. Right now, it's mostly young people on personal travel that are choosing the bus over train.
Now we're seeing that there are people who have really changed their behavior, they're abandoning commercial flights, they're leaving Amtrak behind.
He says about a third of bus riders would have otherwise taken the train. Mainly, they like the bus's low prices and perks like Wi-Fi. Amtrak wouldn't comment on tape for this story, but Robert Puentes of the Brookings Institution points out this isn't bad for the National Rail Network.
I don't think that there's necessarily a problem.
He says Amtrak is experiencing record-high ridership. It's a good thing that more people are able to travel overall.
Those that are being diverted are probably those who may have extra time to spare.
Business travelers, he points out, still overwhelmingly choose Amtrak. In New York, I'm Alex Goldmark for Marketplace.
And finally, Bob, the Easy Bake Oven is getting a makeover.
Never had one.
Me neither. My sister had one, and we played with it and to the detriment of our house. But this electric makeover comes from, you remember, the only way to cook something in there was with a 100-watt light bulb.
They're going to be gone, right?
Yeah. So the U.S. is phasing those out over the coming years. I think the 100-watt bulb actually ends in January. But by the end of this year, companies won't be able to manufacture the 100-watt bulb the way they do right now. So those CFLs will come into play. Well, the compact fluorescent bulbs don't burn as hot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not going to work in the Easy Bake Oven. So
sort of soupy mess coming out of the oven.
Yeah, I just don't I can't imagine what's going to come out of that thing. So the maker of the oven is reintroducing it with a new internal heating element that's going to cost just a little bit more to make. But the good news is how much more you pay, you're going to save on the light bulb you don't have to buy.
There you go.
Yeah. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Bob Moon, in for Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.